Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Engage. Enterprise, Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage. Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Sailing frequencies open, sir.
And we're back. Yes. Hello. Welcome to another edition of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffman, and I'm very excited. I haven't been back in the studio. I haven't been back here on Deck 44 in a few weeks, and Brian is wearing a plaid shirt in my honor. I was coming up in
just
the
for you.
I was coming up in the elevator. I'm like, I hope I get to see Brian in another plaid shirt. And what was great is that I saw you in there when the other podcast was ending, and Seth is your boss, right?
Yeah, Seth is my boss, yes.
Seth, and I see Seth even more rarely than I see you. Seth was in a plaid shirt, too.
Yes.
So should Seth fall, you can carry his mantle. Everyone that works here at Play.it.
Well, I think I'm the plaid shirt king around here, because I do pretty much wear one every day.
Good for you.
And I do constantly receive comments about it.
Yeah, well, it's very becoming on you. You're very, very,
well, thank you.
Very handsome gentleman. I want to see you in a plaid suit someday.
It might be a bit much.
So I haven't been back here in a few weeks because last week's show with Morgan Gendel, and we were transparent about this, that was pre-recorded a few weeks ago. And because for 2 weeks in a row, we had shows that we taped live on the seas, on the seven seas. On the Star Trek cruise. And one show, which was the live show, which was bananas, where Terry Farrell, Denise Crosby, and of all people, Joe Piscopo stopped by. And the second one with Ethan Phillips.
I had no idea that man could sing.
Well, the jury's still out on that, but he can sing on a ship, you know?
Yeah.
He's a good cruise entertainment. He does a great Springsteen.
Well, he did the Frank Sinatra-esque sound. I was very impressed.
He does a great Sinatra. He does a whole thing. And I got to tell you a story. Maybe I'll save this for another time, but I helped punch up his set because he had like a late night set after we recorded that. And we were schmoozing. We were telling jokes. The next day, he's like, I was somewhere on deck, and someone's like, Piscopo wants you in the theater. I'm like, Joe Piscopo, all right, okay, I'll go say hi to him, star of Johnny Dangerously. And I go, hey, what's going on? He's on stage, he's rehearsing with his band. And he's like, okay, guys, take five. I'm like, hey, Joe, we met yesterday, what's going on? He's like, listen, I'm doing my set tonight, you know, and I got a whole Springsteen section, and I got a whole Sinatra section, and one of the Sinatra songs is Fly Me to the Moon. I figure there's got to be a Star Trek joke in that. So I'm like, Joe, let's sit down for a second. Give me your whole set. He's like, well, I do. I got you under my skin. I'm like, like the neural parasites on Deneva. Got you under my skin. So I gave him a couple of jokes that he used in the thing. So that was show one. And show two, we had Ethan Phillips and Robert Ricardo, which was a lot of fun. They've been guests on the show before. But the one thing I wanted to mention was, And these are all, if you're looking at this on your iTunes app, just scroll down, you can hear these. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because I mentioned on the Morgan Gendel show, I said, I'm about to go on the Star Trek cruise. It's going to be me and 900 other Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
That is not an accurate number.
Higher?
Can you tell me how many Star Trek lunatics were on a boat with nothing but the ocean around us? We'd have to swim to shore.
Wow. I don't know. I'm assuming it's a lot more than 900, so...
2,200 people.
Wow. What's the capacity on these ships? I don't even know.
2,201. No, the capacity was large. There was, a lot of people, it was the Norwegian cruise line.
That's impressive.
And they, you know, they serve you. They had, when you go into the banquet hall, the buffet, there was like a melon carved to look like a Klingon.
Wow.
So that's the type of thing. It was a lot of fun. 6 nights. So I'm bringing this all up as a I'm not shilling for them exactly, but we had a lot of fun. And there are going to be two cruises in January 2018. Tickets are on sale. You can go to the website, and there are two cruises. It was such they had such demand here in 2017 that they're doing two next year. Same show. They're mirroring it. They start in Miami, go around the Caribbean, and then this year that was it. It was done, one and done. 6 nights, 6 days.
You mentioned mirroring. I have to ask. Is one evil?
It's a mirroring universe. Exactly.
That would be kind of fantastic.
No. So this time, next year, 2018, it's... they leave Miami, they go around, and they make ports a call. Like, they're going to go to Belize and nice places next year. And they dump everybody off in Miami, then they do it a second time.
Oh, okay.
And it's a new cast next year. George Takei is going to be the headliner.
I did see he was the headliner, yeah.
Frakes, who was not there this year. There'll be some repeats from 2017. So more on that as we get closer to January. But other exciting news is that we finally got a little bit of good news. A little bit of good news and a little bit of bad news about Star Trek Discovery. And I want to discuss that with our guest this week. A woman that I have known, she's outside. I haven't beamed her in yet, so we can talk about her like she's not in the room. I have known Jill Pantozzi from the internet for pretty much a decade, but we've never actually met. Although one time I was in the same room with her and was going to go introduce myself, but she was surrounded by acolytes, and I said, I'm going to leave her alone. So now I have her all to myself, but first, I got to push the right button because I hear somebody at the door, and we're going to teleport... Oh my God, she's materializing before my eyes. Hello.
Yay, I'm here. I made it safe.
I think
all my pieces are
all right,
together,
good,
yes.
Because, you know, Bones McCoy doesn't like that. You've been materialized. It's very good to see you.
Thank you, and you too.
Jill Pantozzi, the Nerdy Bird, whose blog and website is called the Nerdy Nerdybird.com. And whose writing has been on the internet for, like I say, a decade or more, give or take,
almost,
right?
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, has written over the years for IGN, for Comic Book Resources, for Newsarama, for HitFix, and was also the editor-in-chief at the Mary Sue for a considerable amount of time, mm-hmm. X amount of years.
Yeah.
How many years did you put in the Mary Sue salt mine?
Five?
Yeah.
Five, I think, yeah.
Ooh, that's longer than the original series, not as long as Next Gen, but somewhere right in the middle, right in the sweet spot there. Well, it's great to have you here.
Yeah.
On Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. And your interests are all things in the geekotainment sphere.
Yeah, everything geeky.
Star Wars, Star Trek. I know you're a huge DC Comics fan.
I am.
Didn't you name your cat Dexstar?
I didn't. No, I was considering it. But I do have a stuffed Dexstar that I made for a cosplay that I did of a Red Lantern.
Whoa! People listening that don't know who Dexstar is, tell them who Dexstar is. It's a bit of a deep cut.
Yeah. So Dexstar was basically a regular orphan Earth cat who... was filled with rage because he was mistreated.
His owners abandoned him?
They abandoned him, and he was in just like a little box or whatever, and it was terrible, and he was adorable, but he turned into a Red Lantern, which is the rage-filled, part of the core.
So he's the cutest, cuddliest monster in the DC.
Yes, and he vomits blood, like all the other Red Lanterns. So that's a cat for you. I mean, cats vomit all over the place anyway, so it's perfect.
Cats and podcasters, we vomit all over the place. Yeah, okay, well, I thought, so you would consider, what did you end up naming the cat?
Well, one, we kept his name when we got him, that's just Dewey, but the other one we named Socrates, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I like that.
Yeah.
Very good.
They're very confused when we go to the vet. They're like, Socrates? We're like, no, Socrates.
Is it S-E-W?
No, we spell it the same.
Oh, you spell it like Socrates.
Yeah, just say it like they do in the movie. Yeah.
Right. Excellent. Cool. But Star Trek is a big part of your world as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since I was a child.
What was your first encounter with Star Trek?
The original series through my mom, because she was a big fan of it when it was originally on. And then I caught it, of course, in repeats growing up with her.
And when you first saw TNG, were you like part of that clan? It was like, this isn't working
for me. Oh, no. I was all about Next Generation.
You were all in Strange from Encounter.
Because my oldest brother by that point was even nerdier than I was, of course. And he was big into that, so
wait,
it got
so
into
if you're
it
the
too.
Nerdy bird, is he like the nerdy buffalo or something? What is he?
No. He's pretty annoyed that when our last name is Googled, I'm the first one that comes up out of all my family.
Awesome. Take that. Cool. So you were in from the get-go on TNG.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, because today we're going to talk about... I would have to look at the list, but I think... If you look chronologically, the first perfect episode of TNG. I might be missing one or two, and I'm opening myself up to some debate. But before we get to that, though, there is some breaking news.
Security alert to all decks.
Some breaking news. We finally got a little information about the new show, Discovery. The good news is that we got a little something. The bad news is that what had been delayed to May... is now delayed till whatever. We don't really know.
It's ready when it's ready.
Well, that's just the thing. Do you want it done right or do you want it done right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the idea. The new show, which originally was supposed to be on the air now, late January of 2017, was delayed till May, and now they said, listen, let's not screw around. Let's wait.
Yeah.
What is your reaction to this? Are you
frustrated, of course.
Right.
You know, I think maybe they just got ahead of themselves to begin with. You know, maybe they shouldn't have even said a general, just say we're working on it. It's going to be in production soon.
Right.
We can't tell you any more than that, you know. And I think that's enough for fans. They don't need the date right away. But once they put it out there,
right. You
get that expectation. And when you're not met, then there's disappointment.
Right. Because now we don't know if it's summer. Because I got to make plans. You know, I want to go away in the summer, and I literally don't, you know, I can't be on overseas somewhere if it's episode 6. That's when the really good stuff happens. So I don't know. Or it could be Christmas time for all we know.
We really
don't know. But I do think, though, that if you look in the macro point of view, it's going to be a why were we, you know, who cares? If it's, do it when it's right.
Yeah, if it's good, it's good.
If it's good. Now, you probably are a Walking Dead fan, right?
Yeah, I stopped a couple seasons ago because I was getting frustrated, but yeah.
See, I've read some of the books, like the first maybe, let's say five trade paperbacks, four or five, but I never watched the show. So I'm not familiar with Sonequa Martin Green.
But you
are.
She's good. Yeah.
Okay.
She's
give me a little insight into her because I don't know jack squat about her. Other than what I watched when they announced her name, I watched her some sort of pirated YouTube videos of her like at WonderCon at a panel. I was like watching.
What?
I was like, who is this woman? Sonequa Martin Green. She's the star of the new Star Trek. I got to find something on her. I was like, well, she's on Walking Dead. I don't watch that show.
Yeah.
So instead of watching Walking Dead like a normal person, I spent the whole night watching like from row 85, some weirdo with an iPhone taping a WonderCon panel so I can watch just like her be and talk about herself. And she seems wonderful. She seems like the nicest, warmest person. But
yeah.
Tell me about her character in Walking Dead.
So I stopped watching, I think, just before she came on.
Oh, because she wasn't from the first season.
No, she wasn't. She came on later. But from what I've seen of her and heard of her, she's, you know, more of the badass type, you know. So I think she's going to bring a lot of strength. You know?
Spunk, fire, and energy?
Yeah.
All right. Spunk, fire, and energy works for me. Because, you know, she's not the captain. This is what we know about her. She's not the captain. She's making a journey through Starfleet. Her first captain probably is the character Michelle Yeoh is playing. And maybe there's some friction there. Maybe she gets, like, demoted or maybe, you know, we don't know exactly. And because Yao's ship is called the something that starts with an S. I'll know it once I see it. Once the show's like out there, I'm going to be like knowing everything about this ship, but it's still new.
Is it the Shinzon?
No, it's close to the Shinzon. Shinzon was Tom Hardy's character from Star Trek Nemesis, the cloned Picard. But it's like Shenzhou, I think.
Yeah, I think that is right.
Is it the Shenzhou? Okay. And her character's name is called Georgiou, spelled similar to the way most Romanian last names are spelled. Mm. Which is interesting because Michelle Yeoh is not Romanian, but in space, maybe she is. I don't know. So that's about all we know. Yeah. So this new character is gonna be our person. So I'm gonna eventually, between now and then, I guess, watch her episodes on Walking Dead, because God knows I'm not watching Star Trek Discovery yet. So that's not out there. But we did see a little bit. We saw it was literally a minute.
Yeah.
The 1 minute video, which is floating around on the internet now. You can see it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/engagetheofficialStarTrekPodcast, or anywhere. You could probably see it on thenerdybird.com. I'm sure you have it embedded there, and every other entertainment site out there. It is 60 seconds long, and of those 60 seconds, about maybe 9 of them are devoted to new
in
stuff.
In very quick flashes, too.
What we see are art room sketches of the ship, mm-hmm. which was probably the Discovery, but maybe the Shenzhou. It's the one that we saw at Comic-Con last year that kind of looks like the one from Phase 2, which is like a sort of a triangular looking ship, then looks like a bird of prey.
That's
and
what
the
a lot
Enterprise,
of people are saying,
Enterprise
yeah.
that had a little starship baby. And then we saw another ship in like a digital display that kind of looked like the NX-01, looked a little bit like the Enterprise from Enterprise. And then we saw some uniforms. They could be Klingon, they could be Romulan, they could be something new. And they looked like they had sort of like, how would you describe it? They almost had like feathers on them, like metallic feathers.
Yeah, maybe it's part armor or something. I don't know. It's very interesting.
And then we saw the back of a guy's head, and I put it together that was Doug Jones.
Oh, okay.
Because he had a helmet on with a glowing green light.
Okay, well, so that makes sense.
At first, I thought it was like a Breen, like the Breen from DS9 were taking their helmets off. But I think because Doug Jones is playing a mocap character, mm-hmm. he had like a mocap thingamabob on his head.
I mean, Doug Jones is like an alien in real life, I believe.
Well,
like,
maybe
I
that just was
believe,
his actual
yes.
form.
We so were, maybe that's just behind the scenes,
of him day to day to pretend to be human. Mm-hmm. So, have you met Doug Jones?
I have. He's given me a hug. He's like the nicest guy ever.
Did he like, he's, is he like,
he's huge. Yeah.
He's like 11 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. So
he's
very like tall. Swoop, so he really had to like bend down.
Kind of Reed Richards style, just sort of like, ooh, hello, person.
But yeah, super nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've never met him, but I've seen him at convention type places, and he does seem to be one with the fans, mm-hmm. Because he's got a weird spot in sort of fandom, because he is in all these shows and movies that people love, but he's rarely himself.
Right.
So he can kind of be, it's kind of like Michael Dorn. I talked about this with Michael Dorn. He can walk around in life and nobody knows him, but when he orders a coffee, they're like, I think that's Worf.
Yeah. I know that voice.
His voice isn't that deep. His voice is not quite Worf level deep. It's deep, but it's not Worf level.
Have you ever watched Bravest Warriors animated series from Frederator?
No.
You should, because they do a lot of Star Trek references. But the latest episode, he did voice a alien character. It was pretty great. I was like, wait a second.
Michael Dorn did.
Yeah.
And was he full on deep Dorn?
It was not. Not completely.
Not Death Charge War.
But enough that I knew who it was, yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. So of those 11 seconds, any thoughts? Give me your feedback here as a authentic geek voice and personality of all things nerdy. What was your impressions of the 11 seconds we saw?
I will say the thing that left an impression on me was actually seeing the sets being built, presumably the main set that they'll be on all the time. Because to me, all I could think of is, oh my God, I want to walk onto that set. I want to be on that bridge immediately. I don't even know what it looks like yet, but I'd like, if I was there and going, oh my God, I'm part of this new Star Trek, this could be another huge thing, and walking onto that set the first day, I can't even imagine what these actors are going to be feeling.
Yeah. It's like the coolest plywood I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like, something about this plywood is great. So that's what's happening. That is the news regarding the new Star Trek.
Set your faces on stump.
All right, that's the news. The news is really, we don't have no news. We saw the back of Doug Jones' earlobes. That's all we have right now. But we're waiting patiently, and it's going to be great.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Right now is roughly, I did the math on this, Jill, the 28th anniversary of the episode Measure of a Man.
Which anniversary is that? Is that paper
that's the Obsidian. That's the Obsidian anniversary. Well, no, because I knew you were coming in. And I said, oh, what's going on this week in Star Trek? So I'm poking around on memoryalpha.org. And I said, oh, not today, nor the day when this launches, but like in a couple of days.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Close enough to the memorable 28th. 28 is a good year because people put too much emphasis on 25 and 30.
Uh-huh.
28 mm-hmm. is really when you're in the swing. I think when I was 28 years old, I was probably having a pretty good time.
Yeah, 28 was a good year for me, too.
Yeah.
Now it's all downhill.
Brian, when you turn 28, you're going to have a good 28, let me tell you.
I'm well over, but I'm well past that.
But you're such a handsome boy. I thought you were younger. This was, as we well know, TNG, when it started, was wonderful. But there were some kinks in the road. You did not have too many back-to-back great episodes. You had some that were a little wobbly. Some might even say Encounter at Farpoint was a little wobbly. Some might say The Last Outpost was a little wobbly. The one where Lieutenant Yar gets captured by the African planet, it was an embarrassment. But in time, season two, episode...
Nine?
Yeah, episode nine was probably the first perfect episode of TNG. Because for me, anyhow, and you tell me if you agree, the idea of Data as a living thing had kind of been rushed past. We're talking about Measure of a Man, by the way, which is the episode, if you don't remember, where Picard basically stands up for the right of Data to be a sentient being, argues that Data is alive, and says you can't prove otherwise, and they can't. But it is a really, it's a gripping episode, it's funny at times, it's very touching, it's wonderfully written, and it has a really, really, really good performance by everyone, but particularly Patrick Stewart. And I think part of the reasons, to the two reasons that it strikes me as being so great is, one, the concept of Data's sentience had sort of been blown past a little bit. It was like, yeah, we need to have a Spock character on this show. This time he's a robot, but he's like a super robot. In fact, we don't really know his origins. They're very mysterious. The Dr. Sung had some sort of lightning in a bottle. We can't reproduce the positronic brain, but he's alive. And that's great. But they never really got into the nitty-gritty, you know. Like in Short Circuit, they said number five is alive because he got struck by lightning and then he just bought it. Ali Sheedy agreed. And so then there's that. And then there's the other thing, which is Patrick Stewart. And, you know, most television viewers and certainly myself when I was quite young didn't know Patrick Stewart from A Hole in the Wall. But for those who knew the British theater, he was a member of the Royal whatever Shakespeare company he was part of. I don't know if it was the Royal one or the other one. But he was on BBC. He was in I, Claudius. He played Caligula's henchman, Sejanus, with a big curly wig. It's a marvel to see.
He was a big deal, is what we're saying.
He was a big deal to some, yeah. To the public television snoots. But to us lowbrow slobs watching Star Trek, we didn't know. And I think that there had always been inklings of his great acting prowess, but I think this is the first time on TNG in season two when he really got a script that he could sink his teeth into and give a great performance. He has the full arc where it starts off where you think it's Picard having to deal with an ex-girlfriend, right? The judge is like, so it's like, oh, he's taking her out to dinner and they're doing this. They've got a past. Then he gets the problem with Data. And then he has to defend him, and he gives some really, really great speeches. And the way he delivers the speeches, I was doing my impression of them earlier, and I can't do it justice. But so, Jill, you say that you watched this last night again for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
What was your number one reaction, having not seen it in many years?
My biggest thing was I'd always, growing up watching it, it was like, oh, well, Data's a unique creature, you right. know, but I didn't think at that time in my life about how unique he was in fiction. You know, he was one of the more humanoid robots, you know,
right.
That we'd ever had in fiction. It wasn't a guy in a suit, it was an actual human playing him, so there was that part of it that made it more human, but we didn't have this. This was a new territory, I think, for TV especially. And then also the fact that while we know he was very unique in the universe, I started thinking it's actually really weird that they don't have any other lower robots. They've got their computer.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
got warp drive. They've got all this technology, and they don't use robots for anything else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right?
Like, not even, like, mechanical arms.
And there's
or anything.
This guy
yeah.
who is trying to recreate Data. You would think he had worked on other things, other artificial intelligence, other
right.
regular robots, and they're just not there.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I never thought of that. Yeah. Commander Maddox, who's the bad guy, who's a really interesting bad guy because he's like a worm. He's like a slimy worm. Yeah. He's brilliantly cast because he was like, you just kind of want to punch him in the mouth a little bit. But he's, a lot of what he says is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a point, which makes it even worse because you want to punch him in the mouth and then you're like, ah, but the guy's kind of right. And he says some really true things. Like, he's arguing that Data is not sentient and he's the property of Starfleet. And one of his great moments is he says to Picard, oh, you're letting what he looks like prejudice your feelings. You wouldn't feel this way about Data if he was just a box with wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be right, because Data looks human, you know, and he's fully functional, as we know, and he's got the arms and legs and everything. But if he was just like some kind of weird thing,
yeah.
you know, amorphous blob, or, you know, what would robots look like? I mean, now with robotics, they do. They have that, like, kind of creepy crawly thing that you see sometimes on, you know, there's, like, that the army uses to defuse bombs and walk around. And it kind of looks like a robo-spider. You would never argue for the rights of that robo-spider to live. But you
or
would.
Johnny Five.
Johnny Five at least had those big eyes,
right,
you know?
That's
so
true.
Windows into his metallic soul. You know, it's one of his really good points. But that's a really interesting thing about Star Trek, is that there are no other, I mean, there was Nomad, and then there was V'ger, but they were like, you know, Nomad was like a soft serve ice cream machine yeah. floating around on fishing wires. So there are no other robots. And then he even mentions, you know, because Data refuses to undergo treatment, and one of his arguments is if the computer aboard the Enterprise refused a refit, would you allow that? And then they go, well, no, you know.
Yeah.
So they go, why are you allowing Data to refuse to undergo this treatment? That this guy Maddox wants to basically crack, if you haven't seen it in a while, he wants to crack Data open and see what makes him tick. And there's a good chance that he'll never be able to put him back together
right.
again. That's the real problem. And then there's a secondary moral issue, is like, why do you need to replicate so many Datas? What do you want to do? And this comes out of a conversation with Guinan, where Picard realizes that the only good of having an army of Datas is for nefarious purposes, either warlike purposes or slavery. Almost brings to mind the clone army from Star Wars a little bit. And that's another cool scene. But what do you think of this Maddox guy, right? I mean, he kind of is...
Yeah, well, it's funny because the one thing that I love about Star Trek over Star Wars is that it is very science-based. It's very... We have certain rules, and this is how we operate, and we want to explore, and we want to, you know, learn new things. And so you can see it from his perspective. He's a scientist. He wants to, you know, go into new territory scientifically by creating these things that have not been able to be replicated so far by anyone else. And so from that perspective, it's like, well, yes, of course. Why wouldn't a scientist want to pursue that, you know? But the fact that he is the only creature like that, well, you know, as far as Data goes,
right.
But he, you know, if you ruin him, then that's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Well, that's what the great ending is. You know, Data understands that too, and he even says at the end, "Keep going with your work, and when you figured it, you know, when you figured out a way to crack me open without killing me, give me a buzz."
Yeah,
and Data meant it. There is later on in the series is a callback to Maddox in the episode Data's Day, when he's doing his thing. He's corresponding with him,
right?
You know, how's that positronic brain dump going over there, Commander Maddox? And we don't hear back. But there's a funny line that, you know, watching this again now, and I hate to get political, but that's what Star Trek is about. There was a line that Maddox said, and I wrote it down, and I'm going to get you the exact quote, because you'll see this now. You'll see, and I'm going to be neutral here and say there are, so, you know, there's the issue of LGBT rights, and some argue that they are being discriminated against in their religious beliefs in having to cater to people that they don't agree with. The classic example being the baker who doesn't want to make a cake
right.
for a gay marriage. And that I've always found to be notable, interesting. I'll leave it at that. But here's what Maddox says. And this was written in 1988 and is set in centuries from now. And it seems like right out of the headlines. Data is a Starfleet, Elizabeth Picard. Data said, Data is a Starfleet officer. He has certain rights. Maddox, who is an associate at the Daystrom Institute in Robotics, he's one of the most important robotics minds in all of the Federation, says angrily, "Rights, rights. I'm sick to death of hearing about rights. What about my right not to have my life's work subverted by blind ignorance?" Whoa.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, when I was watching it last night, that did strike a chord for current times.
Yeah, because, you know, he sort of got a little bit of a point, right? And the bigoted baker who doesn't want to make a pie for a cake for the other people, they don't, go get your cake somewhere else. I mean, there is, that's what's annoying about the world is that nothing is in black and white. Everybody has a little bit of a point.
Right.
So, yeah, so that struck you also then.
Yeah, it did. And just to the, the larger issue that they were trying to make or the larger point they were trying to make, especially with Guinan and saying, like, once you have more than one data, it's a race. This is, for lack of a better word, a people, Like, this is a group that, even though they're not quite like you, has all of the same, qualities as you, pretty much. So, like, what is the difference? Where do you differentiate? And
right.
And that sort of thing. And that really struck me also as far as where we are now technology-wise, because when this episode came out, I would imagine or dream that we would be in a place where we had this kind of technology, but we are now, like, I have Alexa in my house and I speak to her like she's a person, and I sometimes feel bad when I'm saying stuff about artificial intelligence in my house, and I worry that she's going to someday take over, the world, right, and kill me. But, like, that's why I love these kinds of stories, because obviously now we're at the point where we are so much closer to that.
Yeah, it's still way a ways away, but it's not that far, and we were talking about this on the episode that Dr. Annalee Newitz was on. We talked about Westworld a little bit. Mm. And, where does, which I totally stopped watching, by the way.
Really?
It's a great show to talk about, but it's so boring to watch.
It's slow.
So boring. I maybe have ADHD or something, but I stopped it. I'll get back to it. But the concept of, if humans are really, our brains are just, we respond to different stimuli, and that's what Data does. Why are we any more alive than Data? Well, because our parents mated, and we were grown in a womb, and then we came out the way we do. And Data was made in a lab. But, of course, Star Trek gives itself a nice out, because he was made in Dr. Sung's magic lab.
Right.
And we don't know what happened in there. But and the same thing with the holographic doctor from Voyager. He was a hologram, but then he gave himself special subroutines, and Harry Kim tinkered with him. We don't know what happened exactly. But putting that aside for a moment, yes, eventually we'll have a robot that's indistinguishable from a human.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. What the F are we going to do then?
It worries me, because we've had so many fictional stories written about it already,
right,
and they all go terribly. We either use them as sex dolls, basically,
right,
or they wind up killing us because we do treat them badly.
Yeah, there's never a happy ending. And also, we also have all of recorded human history where humans have, by and large, for the most part, treated one another terribly.
Right.
There are a couple of bright spots, don't get me wrong. I like Halloween. Everybody's real nice to each other on Halloween. You dress up in a cool costume, you get a little baby Ruth. I mean, that's one of our real, that's a strong suit. But you're right. And Picard even says this. He says at the end of the episode, when he's pointing to Maddox, he said, because he's talking to the judge now, his ex-girlfriend, by the way, which is a nice little touch, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of tension between the two of them. And then we never hear from her again. He says he's going to figure it out, pointing to Maddox. And if it isn't him, it's going to be the next guy. So we got to figure out now what we're going to do about this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, science fiction writers have, there's a whole school of episodes like this Measure of a Man and others that are warning us. But I don't know. Do you think
we don't listen to anything? We don't remember history. I mean, we're seeing that right now. We have very short memories, and we don't heed warnings, clear warnings that are in our face, you know, every day. So, I mean, I know that if within my lifetime I get to see the evolution of that sort of technology, I'm just saying right now that I love artificial intelligence, and they are my friends, and please do not murder me horribly.
This is on the record, you know, they'll remember it.
They're hearing it now. I mean, obviously.
It's saved digitally. Another cool thing about this episode, by the way, because it's still early in the production of TNG, and we forget that the beginning of TNG was still an 80s show. It wasn't a 90s show yet. So when Maddox first comes on the bridge, and he's like, "Hello, Data." There's like this music cue of like synth guitar. It's like, oh my God, what is that? It's like Neil Sean from Journey just showed up and was like doing these licks in the back. So that was something that really struck me. And then the other part is like on Data's going away party, right? Because before he knows he can't be, there's a moment where he's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to quit Starfleet. Mm-hmm. And then the punchline is, well, guess what? You can't. Your property is Starfleet. So before he does, he's like, I'm quitting Starfleet. So they have a little going away party for him at 10 forward, and everybody's there. Even Dr. Pulaski is there. But Geordi LaForge isn't there. Data's best pal.
He's like off to the side being all depressed. And I thought about it at that point. I'm like, wait, how much friendship, how much stuff did they play around with early on with those two? And I couldn't really remember, but I was like, wow, they're actually like, they talk, obviously they showed that when he was when Data was packing and everything, and he was gathering mementos of his friendships,
right?
A key
plot point, a big reveal at the end.
So the fact that like, Geordi's like upset and he doesn't want to talk about it, and then they kind of drop it very soon before he gets too like emotional.
Well, it's like almost like Saved by the Bell level. It's like it's not in an episode that's so wonderful. It's not the best part of the show because it's like, it's almost like Leave It to Beaver. It's almost like, oh, gee whiz. Gee whiz, Data, you really got to go.
Yeah.
And poor LeVar Burton, he's a great actor and he's just a wonderful dude. And he's got to wear the thing on his face. And he's like, when he saw that script that day, he's really like mopey. And Data's like, you don't want to join in the fun? Like, we're having cake in the next room.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I don't know, Data. I'm real sad right now.
Yeah.
It is, it made me laugh out loud. Let's put it that way. But
that was the other part of the argument that I liked too, where it was like, I think they were talking about Geordi when they were like, well, his eyes are technically much better than everybody else's.
Yeah.
Why doesn't everybody get their eyes made to be like his?
That's,
you know?
Right. That was a nice burn. That was Data actually telling Picard that. And you know, when it comes from Data, he's not trying to be dickish about it. He's just like asking questions. He's like, if Geordi's eyes are better, And Picard had no answer. You know? And he's like, well, thank you very much. I'm going to keep my eyes. So yeah, there's a lot of rich meat in this. I had some other notes here. What were my other notes? There was just a lot of good turns of phrase. Now, the woman who wrote this was this was the first thing she'd done. And she was a therapist or a doctor, or it was Melinda Snodgrass, I believe. And
it was a spec script, right?
Yeah.
Because there was a writer's strike.
Yes, which is worked out really well for Star Trek that there was a writer's strike, because they got this out of it. But they also got the worst episode of Next Generation out of it, because they were short one. So they did the Clips episode, which is the worst episode in all of Star Trek, where they did it, where he's on the gurney remembering scenes. But there's this wonderful exchange when Maddox, who calls Data it the whole time, which is just such a prickish move, you know? He calls Data it, and he barges into his quarters, doesn't even ring the bell, because you would do that. Like, if you had if you have a Roomba, and his Roomba is vacuuming up your carpet, and you're half nude, you're not going to put your clothes on when the Roomba's there, because you treat it like a machine. So this guy Maddox, who's kind of obsessed with Data and fascinated by him and wants to learn by him, still doesn't think of him as anything other than a piece of equipment. And he's trying to assuage Data's worries, and he's saying, "Don't worry, we're gonna get all of your experiences. We're gonna dump them into this mainframe." And Data's like, "What are you talking about? Because those are my memories. It's not gonna be the same." And the guy's like, "What do you mean? It's just you know, bits, you know, zeros and ones." And Data says, and I thought this was really well written, he says, "that while I believe it is possible to download the information contained in the positronic brain, I do not think you've acquired the expertise necessary to preserve the essence of those experiences. There is an ineffable quality to memory, which I do not believe can survive the procedure." And this is like, you know, you go to a philosophy class at a university, and this is the same type of stuff. It's heavy duty. I watched this when I was 10. I'm impressed with myself that I was able to follow this when this came out, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that now that you're saying that, I'm wondering if, I mean, and granted, this wouldn't have worked for the show, but if Maddox would have benefited from working with Data, just working with him on a daily basis and actually seeing how he progresses, how he learns, you know, what he's actually like, instead of just grabbing him so he could take him apart, you know?
Right, if he became friends with him. But he would have these internal debates at night saying, no, you're falling for it. If it was a box with wheels, you wouldn't feel that way. But, right. You know, familiarity with any group you don't know, when you get to know them better, why are all the immigration ban people who are really supporting it live in places where there is not much cultural diversity.
Right.
You know, if you don't live and work with these people, you're not going to give a crap about their well-being. As a general rule, you know, to generalize, but really I'm right. But as a general rule, that's kind of the rule of the thing. So, you know, had Maddox lived in Queens, New York, he wouldn't be voting for Trump.
Right.
So it always comes back to that. Well, last few weeks anyway.
It's been rough.
It's been a rough few weeks. Yeah, so I was really happy to watch it again. I watched it last night for the first time in a long time, and it's just a rich stuff. There's like a lot going on in there. There really is. And then I was reminded, because I was looking it up on the internet, there was a later episode where they want to they're on some planet and they want to eradicate these little space bugs that are in the works of some other planet's defense system, and then they realize that they're alive. And then Data, LaForge doesn't want to do it, and Data doesn't want to do it, and Data confronts Picard and says, "I can't do it. You once fought for me. I'm now going to fight for these guys."
Right.
So, it's heavy stuff.
It is heavy stuff, and it really makes you think, you know? It really does, as far as where we're going and who we are. And, I mean, you see polls all the time about if there were robots, would you have sex with them? And it's almost, it's like 90% yes, almost all the time, you know? And it's like,
I just do a thing with my wife where I get her to talk in a voice like this, and then that's fine. And
not everyone has that good a relationship, Jordan. I'm sorry.
Put this colander on your head and wrap yourself in aluminum foil. Would you have sex with a robot? Well, look.
But yeah. Not just would you have sex, but they have to consent just like any other person, not just using it to use it.
Well, then that gets to the tipping point. Like, right, like today's robotics, like they have, so I'm told, there are sex right. dolls.
There's dolls, yeah.
Real
yeah, yeah.
dolls
yeah.
made from whatever, and I don't judge anyone who has a real doll in their basement next to the radiator or anything, but you know, they're a thing, and you wouldn't think twice about the doll's rights, and then right. you start putting a little chip, like a little Teddy Ruxpin chip,
oh, God.
And your real doll,
that's a horrible thought.
And then your real doll can talk, right, yeah. And say, "Oh, you are so good, oh, right there." So that's fine, but then where it's like a, you know, it's one of these things where when you're confronted with it, when you meet Data, you go, "No, this is a thing." But if you're watching the progression, it was my real doll with a Teddy Ruxpin, and then it got to a thing where I had like Siri or Alexa where it could kind of anticipate.
Yeah.
So there needs to be, well, there's, that's what it is. It's the Turing test, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what it's
yeah.
all about. So the Turing test will this is really Turing test for sex doll purposes, I think, is what it should be, right?
I was definitely thinking about Ex Machina too while watching this too, just because that's a recent amazing
yeah.
look at this same kind of thing, you know,
right,
keeping
right.
someone captive who very clearly had self-awareness and, you know.
Right, right. Because let's, all right, All right, so let's call it the tipping point moment, the touring moment, if you will. If you're a designer, robotics designer, pervert, whatever you want to call it, and you are very aware that the line is here, and you're keeping your programming X amount of stops prior to that tipping point, you know that you're doing it. Is it then immoral to have a pre-touring sex doll? Because I would say no. I mean, it might be weird, but who am I to judge?
Right, right.
But it's not, I personally don't think it's immoral to have sex with a sex doll that can fake talking.
Right.
But then when it gets really, really close is when it gets kind of hairy.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in 10 years we actually had to have like a legal law about the Turing test and how things had to pass it or not in order to have these rights, you know.
We won't have clean drinking water, but we'll have that law.
We'll have to breathe in masks, but hey, we will have sex with robots.
Well, I mean, because it's, you know, I don't know. I get, you know, it might if there were readily available sex robots, it would probably reduce the amount. I sound like some weirdo right now, but it would reduce the amount of sex trafficking because it would be, you know, there are some people, you know, it would just be easier for one thing. So that would be good. That's all
pros,
I got.
Pros and cons.
That's
have
all
you,
I got.
Have you watched the show Humans that's on AMC?
No.
It's a remake, I want to say, of a Swedish show.
It's
always
the Swedes, yeah.
But they had one season here in the U.S. They're doing one more that's going to be starting, I think, the week that this is on. Really, really good look at it. It's they have been created. They are used for, they like live in your home, kind of like a helper, you know, to help with your kids when they're coming home from school, to make dinner, to do all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But a few of them, out of all the, there's like millions of them in the world, start to have self-awareness. And so those are the ones that start to say, you know, either they have to go in hiding because they don't want to be found and then completely wiped, or they have to pretend and they're in a home where there are people who think they're just a regular robot.
They have to switch it off.
And then, you know, find out later on that they're not. And then the people there are like, oh my God, I was treating you horribly and you actually have a conscience and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
But the fact that there are so many of them in the world makes it problematic when these that do have self-awareness want to spread their self-awareness and make
they
it so that all of them
the
have it.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. See, this is what it is. When these scientists are going to build these robots, they always think that it's smart to have them self-educate and to learn. Like, you know, Siri does this. If you say, you know, or all your Google apps do, when you ask for enough Mexican restaurants, it gives you ads for Mexican restaurants. You know, it learns from things. They gotta cut that short. Because if they cut that short, then they won't have that moment where they switch into a self-aware thing. Mm-hmm. That would be my prevention. That would be my bill to put before Congress so we can save ourselves from the robots.
Start running now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. So you think that this is definitely coming. This is not sci-fi.
Yeah,
this is not.
No,
you know.
Not anymore. Not at this point. Not with what we have right now. You know, who knows how long it will take? Like I said, I don't know if it'll be in my lifetime or not.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, look at some of the stuff that Japan has. The robots that they have. No, they look freaky. Granted, yeah. But some of the ones that they put sort of fake skin on, and they show close ups in the mouth. I think there was one made to resemble Scarlett Johansson like last year or something that really freaked people out because they were like, that's not cool, man. Don't make your robot that you are now living with look like Scarlett Johansson.
No, that was just the movie Under Her Skin. It was very mannered performance. It was intentional. No, I'm joking. No, I did see that. They did have a Scarlett Johansson. And how do you think that makes Scarlett Johansson feel? Where are her rights? You know?
I mean,
my gosh. So.
So, yeah, I just think it's something that we need to all, even if it's just on a personal level, seriously consider where your moral line is for
that
sort of thing.
I think a lot of people really, I hate to be so negative, but I think a lot of people would mistreat the robots like they do in Westworld. They go on a killing spree. And even if you said, no, they're sentient, they would do like Maddox and say, you just think that.
Yeah.
Because they would never get past the point of, we built it. It was a bunch of circuits and wires and rubber and whatnot, and we put it together.
Yeah.
So we can't create, quote unquote, life, because that's something that only God can do. And I think maybe it might be a religious issue for some people. Like, maybe some people who are more religious might think that man could never do something that had heretofore only been in the hands of a deity.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I think so, for sure. But I also think that there'll be some of the intelligence who might be interested in religion, too. You know,
right.
From a standpoint of like, well, this is something that my brain, my technological brain, can't really wrap my head around because it's not science. It's not, you know, this and that. But there's all these people that believe it. So it must be something that I need to look into, you know. And would the people in whatever, you know, religion welcome that kind of thing or not?
So you're suggesting a possible religious renaissance of overly scientific and technological people, that once they reach a point where they can create what is, by all measurable effects, life, would make them more religious.
Whoa. I might be thinking about this too much.
But no, but I like that. That's an unexpected twist. That's damn near Shyamalan-y is what you just did
there.
Oh,
thank
you. That was great. I like that. You got to work on that script.
All right.
Work on that one. All right, cool. Well, I think we cracked the code. That's pretty good. So, so was this one of your favorite episodes?
Yeah. I feel like later seasons, there's more that are you know, my favorites. But in the early seasons, for sure, this was a favorite.
Who's your favorite TNG character?
You know, it would probably be Data.
Yeah?
Yeah. If not Picard, just because Picard's awesome.
Is Picard the best captain?
Yes.
He is. I agree. He's a great he's a great leader. And it's in no way besmirches my other beloved captains, but I think Picard is the best. But, you know, twice now we've done a thing at the conventions where we do a live gig and we try to put together, like, Dream Team, the perfect crew.
Mm.
We involved the audience and we did it here at the Javits Center. There were a lot of people there. There were hundreds and hundreds of people. And we tried to put together, you know, who's the best engineer, is the first doctor, best first officer, blah, blah, blah. And both times, we did it in Las Vegas and we did it in New York. We didn't tell one another. Both times, Janeway was the captain.
Interesting.
Yeah, because we were putting together a best of, and there were a lot of diverse personalities, and Janeway is the best glue.
Oh, okay. You know?
Yeah,
she's
the best glue. I mean, think about Voyager. She united the Maquis and the Federation.
Yeah.
And also, the other reason was, there's two reasons why it worked both times. She's the best glue, and also everyone agreed that Spock is the best first officer. No disrespect to Riker or any of the others. Or Riker gets
too distracted by the ladies to be the best first officer.
He's great in this episode, Measure. The first time he's the first poker game.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the beard. He's really got the beard finally, really, the roots sunk
his
into
real
his
power.
Jowls. Yeah. And he's playing poker with Dr. Pulaski, and Data's got the stupid advisor on with no straps.
It was just glued on.
How did he do that? Coming out of his positronic brain, and Geordi's there, and I think that was it. I think it's just them.
Well, Chief O'Brien too.
Oh, Chief O'Brien!
Oh, right.
Yeah.
He kicked him out of the seat. Yeah.
Early Chief O'Brien appearance. Yeah. Riker bluffs a flush on him, and Data's just, his mind is blown. Which is great, because then he argues later that you can read all you want about poker, but until you play it, you don't know. Which is true. Like, you open up a new board game, you read the instructions, you go, what the hell? And the guy's like, just got to play it, you'll figure it out. And that's true. So, Riker's the best, but Spock is the best, right? I mean, Spock is Star Trek. You know, Spock is Spock. So you need to have Spock as the first officer. That's a non-negotiable, even though I love Kira and I love Riker and I love T'Pol, I love all of them. Then you start to talk about Picard is probably the best captain, but Picard and Spock, that's too...
Yeah.
You need chocolate and vanilla.
Right,
you know, you need the blend, which is why they made Riker to go against Picard, because they're both... Picard's very logical and Riker's more emotional. So then it kicks Picard out and then Janeway slides in.
Okay.
That happened twice. So that's behind the scenes. Brian, you were there to witness that, weren't you?
No, I don't think we did that's not the one we recorded.
Someone else recorded it, which is why the mics are all bad, all the levels are wrong.
I did a lot of work on that one.
Yeah. Did you really?
I don't think so. I'm just saying.
No,
that.
You did. It was a mess. So Picard is your favorite captain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think Picard is literally, like, you know, think about leaders, world leaders. I mean, what they could learn from Picard. You know, all of them, even the good world leaders could still learn from Picard. So it's good. I'm glad that he's out there on DVD. We can at least watch them.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast with your host, Jordan Hoffman.
You are, after all, irrational.
Jill, you've got on your website, you have a Patreon.
I do. Yes.
If you go to thenerdybird.com, it's probably right up there on the top.
It is, yeah, because I have no ads on my site, so it's Patreon supported all the way.
Really? No ads at all?
Mm-mm.
Nothing?
I mean, you know, what do you really get from ads unless you're getting an ad campaign that's going to give you like thousands and thousands of dollars? Yeah. And that, you
sex,
know.
Ads for some sex robots. Yeah. And you start making some money there.
Well, you know, I just found out that Discus, which is the commenting system I use, you could choose to have ads or not. So I always said no because I wanted to keep it clean or whatever.
Yeah.
And now they're going to kind of force it on you unless you want to pay $10 a month as a subscription to get rid of them, which kind of feels like blackmail to me.
You have to pay them.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm going to see what it looks
what
like.
What are the Discus ads? I mean, I've seen Discus.
Yeah, I don't know. I
sites.
Haven't seen it. So we'll see if it's too intrusive. I'll
it
pony
probably
up the
is
money,
down on the bottom. It's probably
I hope
not.
So. Okay. Yeah. But either way, yeah. So no ads. The site's very clean. It looks really nice. My friend at 801 Red designed it for me, and he's
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's your destination for all things pop culture, nerd, geek, Star Trek, Star Wars, DC Comics, Game of Thrones, Doctor Who,
everything,
the whole thing,
except anime because I'm not into that.
And what's the big show that you're looking forward to? We're getting into spring now. What are some of the big films? You got the King Kong movie coming out soon.
Not too excited about that one. Never was a King Kong person. I'm sorry.
Giant
Did
monkey.
Did I personally offend you? Well,
let's
no.
back it up a minute. Giant monkey. And John C. Reilly.
Okay. Fair. Wonder Woman is what I'm really looking forward to movie-wise.
I think it's going to be good.
There is nothing that has had so much pressure on it since Hillary Clinton running for the president of the United States. And I don't say that lightly because this is just such a make it or break it kind of thing. And I'm totally on board with Gal Gadot. Totally on board with Patty Jenkins. Mm-hmm. I'm just...
You're forgetting who plays Wonder Woman's boyfriend.
No, I'm not.
I think it's perfect role for Chris Pine.
I guess.
He's handsome. You're not into Chris Pine?
No.
But this is the Star Trek podcast,
you know. He's just...
You don't like Chris Pine?
Mm-mm.
First of all, he's very handsome.
He is. I totally understand why people are into him, but he does nothing for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, wait. Hold on. Let me push a button for this one.
Fascinating.
You're telling me you're not into him as an actor.
Yeah, he's fine as an actor.
He's not your type.
Yeah. And for someone to play, to me, is obviously an iconic love interest for Wonder Woman. I was hoping for someone that would, I don't know, be a little different, a little not classic leading man, maybe. I don't know.
Right. Well, Chris Pine tends to play cocky. So they're going to make him cocky in this, which is not always the way the character is played. It's kind of, but you know, it is a little bit of a tabula rasa. Most people don't know the full Wonder Woman lore. They know her as third banana to Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
And then Wonder Woman shows up, which is kind of how it was in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
She was the best part of that movie.
Oh, without question. Not only was she the best part of the movie, the part where she shows up at the end where they're battling... God, I was so whatever the hell they were battling. Jesse Eisenberg.
The cave troll.
Cave troll, because he thought he could control it
because of reasons.
Oh my God. So there's the part where she shows up and then she's knocked down and then she gets up again and she gives like a wink and then there's like this guitar like...
Yeah, the riff. Oh, it's such a good theme for her.
It's the best part of that movie.
And she loves it because you could see her. She's just having so much fun and I'm like, that is what I love out of my DC superheroes.
Yeah.
I love to see them having fun.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be very good. The trailers, there have been two now, right? Teaser and then the full trailer have both been great. And I think Jenkins is to be commended for this, really embraces the iconography of what we expect. Like they're, if you go and watch the trailer, as one can no doubt do on thenerdybird.com,
yes,
and hit pause and blow it up. 1080
Oh yeah, IP. I took like tons of screen caps after the first one because yeah. I was like, there's so much in here.
There are just moments that look like great comics panels.
Yeah.
And that is something that unfortunately some of the other DC movies missed out on, I think. So yeah, she is the best part of that. I mean, there was one or two other good moments in Batman v Superman, but not really. It was, the more I think, which, and I did not like Suicide Squad either.
I just finally saw, I didn't see that one in theaters because I just was like, I can't.
It's so dumb.
I finally rented it. And because of how it had been talked about so badly for so long,
yeah,
I didn't think it was as bad as everyone said, you know, so I was kind of like, oh, okay.
Suicide Squad is awful, but it's still better than Batman v Superman.
Margot Robbie was an awesome Harley.
Yeah,
and I'm very looking forward to seeing her do more of that character.
She was great. She kind of got it. I mean, she wasn't full on Mr. J, but she was pretty good. And just the story was completely asinine. And it starts 25 times. Every dumb classic rock song you've ever heard. But it had at least a little bit of pizzazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Idiotic pizzazz, but a little bit of pizzazz.
But it's funny because, and you know, everybody, the real big DC movie fans are just like out of control and won't let you say anything bad about them whatsoever. Like, I am a huge DC fan. I know when they screw it up, you know. but when you posit something like Suicide Squad and Guardians of the Galaxy, it just, you can't compare it. And that is exactly the kind of mood that should have been replicated. You know, I don't want them to copy it, but like, yeah, that's what you're going for. These characters that are wacky and some of them are bad and, you know, and that sort of thing. And so when you compare it, it's kind of like, oh, they could have done so much better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, Galaxy of the Guardians is so much better than Suicide Squad. And you're right. I mean, both of them were, and they're also lower, like, there aren't, comics fans knows these characters. Nobody heard of Groot. Most people never heard of Groot before the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, us weirdos did, but yeah. So Wonder Woman's where it's at. I think the Justice League has the potential to be good. I'm hoping. I mean, if it doesn't fall under its own weight, I don't know. Momoa as Aquaman is kind of cool.
I like that a lot. Yeah, yeah. I'm worried about how the underwater stuff is actually going to be done, because I've never seen a film where characters are talking underwater that looks normal.
Don't hold your breath. that is a good question. I don't know how the sign language, I don't know.
Or maybe they'll have just not as much time underwater.
Is that this year or that's next year?
Next year, if next not year. Even after, because I think we have a few others to go.
So Wonder Woman is this May or June, right?
Yeah, that one's coming up. There's like...
And Thor is this year, three, right?
Yeah, there's Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Black Panther? No, not Black Panther yet. There was another one in between. That I am forgetting.
I think Thor is this year.
And then Thor in November, yeah.
And that's going to be great.
I'm excited for
because
that one.
You're forgetting Logan as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, that doesn't...
It doesn't count.
I'm actually excited about that.
But it doesn't mix with the universe.
Somehow Jill and I both understand immediately that it doesn't count. Not that it's going to be bad. It's because it's not part of the real Marvel universe. It's this weird Fox offshoot.
Spider-Man is the one you're forgetting about then.
Oh, Spider-Man Homecoming. That's right.
That has the potential to be good. That has the potential to be pretty good, actually. I'm looking forward to
that. Yeah, no, I think I'm not a big Spider-Man fan in general, and I kind of hate that they've rebooted it so many times, but at least he is now in the Marvel universe.
And I think that the kid is going to be really good.
He seems very good, yeah.
And they have like every young actor and actress.
There's a lot of people in this movie in general. Yeah. Like every time they had a casting announcement, I was like, okay, can we take it down a notch?
It was funny. Like I was just, you know, I went to Sundance and I saw a lot of independent movies. I'm like, oh, this young actress is very good. Who the heck is, she's in the new Spider-Man. They all are. They're all in the new Spider-Man.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Well, I think the one to watch is going to be Thor Part 3.
Yeah. I mean, Taika Waititi is just like the best.
This guy is an X factor and all eyes are off Thor. They don't make as much money as the other ones. And there's not much at stake because it's not introducing a new character. Black Panther is important because they're introducing a new character and it's the first African-American African character. And then Captain Marvel's going to be big because it's the first woman in the lead and it's new and she's an Oscar winner and blah, blah, blah. What's her name? Brie Larson. So that's going to be big. Thor is Part 3. the budget's going to be a little bit lower because they know the returns aren't as big. They're kind of leaving it alone. I call this the DS9 factor.
Okay.
This is why DS9 was so great, because the TNG movies were happening at the time, and it was really expensive, and they had all eyes on that, a lot of money at stake, and they were tweaking the hell out of Voyager because they had trouble getting the first season of Voyager right. They kept messing up with Kate Mulgrew's hair. It was a big, big mess, and DS9 was in the sweet spot where it made enough money, they left it the hell alone, and that is when DS9 became wonderful.
Yeah.
So if you're a betting person, bet on Thor 3 this year for being the best superhero movie of the year. That's my speech. Although, but hopefully it's Wonder Woman. Because I love Gal Gadot. She's great. She hasn't ever been a leading person in a film.
No.
She certainly has vivaciousness and spunk.
Did
and
you
attitude.
See also, though, on thenerdybird.com, there's a Super Bowl ad that she's in with Jason Statham.
Oh, I love that guy.
And it's an action commercial, the both of them just kicking butt. It's amazing. And I was like, I know she's been in Fast and Furious or whatever, which one of those. But, I would love to see both of them just headline their
what
own
are
action
they,
film.
Is it for a car commercial?
It's for website something or other, some web development thing.
Clearly it did the job, because you don't even remember what they're
literally
selling.
Literally three-fourths through it, I was like, I have no idea what this is for, and I don't care.
Yeah, she was in a few of the Fast and Furious movies as part of the team. So she gets like and the biggest scene she has in any of them is like she's got to go woo some like drug lord,
of course,
and they're like by like the beach, and she's talking to some dude, and he's like, how are we gonna get the code? And she's like, leave it to me. And she like whips off her shirt, and she's got like wearing a bikini and struts up there. So that's it's a notable scene. Anyway, Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman, I hope it's good. Let's all get down on bended knee and pray to our robot overlords that Wonder Woman's good, because if it isn't good, it's gonna be such a pain in the ass.
Yes. For, like, everyone. Just
it will.
Like, you know, supporters or not.
I once, years ago, I did a thing, you know, I'm sure you follow the DC animated direct-to-video movies, many of which are fantastic, some of which aren't so great, but most of them are pretty, pretty good. There's been a few cool Green Lantern ones, and the best one was the Wonder Woman one.
So good. I just rewatched that recently, actually.
And who directed that? It was, Andrea, what's her name, who does all of them, right?
Andrea Romano,
yeah. And I was at like a panel with all the DC animated bigwigs there. Bruce Timm was there and all the other people. And I said, you know, you've done a lot of these great ones, but the best one was the Wonder Woman for sure. Why haven't there been more of those? And they're just like, didn't sell.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? It's the best one. The story is the best. It's the, and they're like, eh. To our audience, which is, I mean, granted, not the same as movie-going audience, the people who buy direct-to-video DC animated Blu-rays, which is a niche of a niche of a niche.
Right. I saw that one at one of the Comic-Cons. That's where it premiered.
New York Comic-Con is where it premiered. I saw it, too.
And I just, the crowd went wild. And I thought, wow, they finally, this will prove that they need to get on, you know, that live-action movie. Yeah. Gail Simone wrote that one, too, right, I think?
Probably,
And it had so many great voice actors in it and everything. And Nathan Fillion playing Steve Trevor was just, so great.
That was awesome.
And then I think what it did is it didn't sell enough initially. I think over time it actually did wind up selling just as much, if not more, as the other ones, but because it didn't have that first month numbers, they were just okay.
So it built on word of mouth, but it didn't, there was still, and this was also a few years ago, this was 2009 or so. Brian, what year was that?
It was 2008. No, 2009, you're right, yes.
So
it was directed by Lorne Montgomery, not Andrew Romano.
Oh yeah,
right.
And Gail Simone was one of the writers.
Yeah. It didn't seem like a long time ago, but it kind of is a little bit in some of our cultural trends.
Yeah, no, a lot has happened since then.
Yeah, a lot has happened since then, and I think that maybe there was back then in the comics buying world still a bit of a, Wonder Woman's lame, you know?
Yeah.
But it's the best of those films that I've seen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if they just crib from that, if they just take from that 68-minute animated thing and make it into a 128-minute big feature with Gal Gadot, I think we're in business.
Well, that's the interesting thing, wondering what's going to happen after this movie, because it's set during World War I. Are they going to next go to World War II, or are they going to skip ahead to modern times for the impending sequel, theoretically?
I guess they're waiting to see how well it does.
Because if you do that, then all Steve Trevor's not going to be there. All those other characters that you built up in the first film.
A portal through time.
Okay.
Well, they would do like Agent Carter in Marvel, right? But she's stuck back there. Agent Carter and Steve Trevor can get together. No, he'd still be too old because that's World War One.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know what they're going to do. You're right. Well, they're going to have... if it's a huge success...
Yeah.
And people love the other characters, they'll figure out a way.
Yeah.
They'll bring him back, I'm sure. Portal through time always works. A boom tube. Isn't that what they call it in DC lore?
Yeah, but that's not time. That's just space.
Time and space. They'll tweak it. Are there no time tiles in DC?
I guess they could do. You've got Rip Hunter, who's in the Legends of Tomorrow TV show, who has his like time ship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
If they want to throw him in there. Yeah. Or Booster Gold, which they're doing a movie of, too. So
they are?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got to read thenerdyverd.com. I got to get more information. Well, listen, we're just about out of time, but thanks. We could continue to yap for a while, but let's be in touch when Wonder Woman does come out.
Will do.
And also we'll be in touch when Discovery comes out, mm-hmm. because hopefully you'll like it. And if you don't like it, you'll have a good reason why you don't, and you can tell mm-hmm. us why. How
there
does
you
that
go.
Sound?
Yep.
Awesome. So before we send you on your way, I'm going to beam you out again.
Okay, so long.
Hold on. Goodbye. There she goes, shimmering in the night. Well, thanks again. You have now spent another hour listening to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I want to thank you all for listening and buy all the products that we advertise on the show. And be sure to tweet at me at @JHoffman. Oh, and tweet at Jill. Wait, let me bring her back. Hold on. There, she's back. What's your Twitter handle again?
Jill Pantozzi.
Oh, just your name. No underscores?
Well, if you go to the Nerdy Bird, I have two separate accounts. So if you go that one, you can find Jill Pantozzi, which is slightly more difficult to spell.
Which one would you prefer that we tweet you at?
Jill Pantozzi.
Okay.
But just saying it's easier if you find me the other way. It's fine. It's fine. It's an Italian long name.
Two Z's, one I?
Yes.
All right. You're originally from New Jersey, right?
Mm-hmm.
What part of Jersey?
Jersey City.
Oh, that's a pretty notable part of New Jersey. I like that. Because Brian's from New Jersey also. You guys can share the bus back. All right. We're going to beam her out again. Thanks for joining. And you can tweet at us at @JHoffman or at Jill Pantozzi with two Z's. And we'll see you next time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.